Hello and welcome to On the Spot. My name is Mona Davids and I am the publisher of Little African News and the New York Voice News. I'd like to welcome everyone and thank you for joining us today. We have a new panelist too on the spot today, John Levine. So John, thanks again for joining us today on the spot, because you will be on the spot. And, please tell us about yourself and then Yatin, you as well. So John, we'll start with you because you're the newbie.
Well, Mona, it's great to be here. And my name is John Levine. I was a news reporter for many years at the New York Post, 6 years actually. And we covered a lot of national politics, domestic politics, local, city, and state. And we did that until 2025. And then I moved down to D.C. in April to work at the Washington Free Beacon, where I still focus on politics, but it's now a bit more D.C. national. I miss covering the city council and that kind of stuff. And there's still plenty of madness there. And now you obviously have a great, very... a rich mayor's race, and what will probably be a very amusing or depressing 4 years ahead of you. So I'm a little sad that I'm not in the thick of it now, but we're still keeping a few fingers in on that issue here in D.C. And so I'm just happy to be here and talk about it.
Wonderful. Well, we're glad to have you. And Yatin.
Good evening, Mona. It's great to be back here again. Yatin Chu, I head up two organizations. One is Place NYC. I co-founded and focusing on education advocacy. We've been trying to keep, we have kept the specialized high school test, working on expansion of accelerated education in public schools. I'm also president of Asian Wave Alliance. We focus there on the issues that are important to the Asian community in New York City. So that goes beyond education and it goes into obviously public safety, economics, affordability, senior services and such. But education is also a big part of that. So glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us. And we also have Michael Benjamin, who I see is in the process of logging on. So once Michael joins us, we'll have him do his introduction. But I want to dive right into it. Last night, Sunday night, I think it was like after 7 o'clock, giving a new meaning to the word, Sunday night dump. I don't know. We have the Friday, the Friday dumps. Now we have a Sunday, but Governor Hochul endorsed Soran Mamdani for mayor in a New York Times op-ed, and I just would love to get you guys' thoughts on her op-ed. I found it to be word salad. I think the New York Post said mealy mouth. That's another good word for it. But John, what did you think of Kathy Hochul's op-ed about why she's endorsing Soran Mamdani?
Well, the first thing that struck out to me was how many times in the op-ed she felt the need to say, "I don't agree with everything. I don't really like even a lot of the program." And then you could tell this is like a hostage situation. She was sort of forced to do this. I think maybe Working Families or DSA or I don't know who read her the Riot Act. I mean, it's interesting how she's like the first big state politician to cave. Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer still holding out, but, for how much longer? I think part of it, too, is she's trying to protect herself. She'll have a primary. When is she up now next? She'll have a primary. Next year. I mean, she's looking at the DSA for her own primary. And she's, this is a form of appeasement, I think. Okay, maybe if I back him and we're friends, that they won't come after me. But of course, appeasement never works. And Zoran is going to 100, if not, well, I don't know if he'll openly support a challenge, but of course, his political backers in the DSA will try to get rid of Hochul. They'll try to get rid of Schumer and Hakeem as well, because these aren't Democrats. They're very avowedly committed to destroying the Democratic Party, just as they are the Republican Party. One of Zoran's top people, I wrote this story, I think publicly endorsed a post saying that she was an evil monster. And yes. like They have nothing but contempt and loathing for her. And I fear that this endorsement will only add to that.
Yeah. Yatin, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think John hit the nail on the head. You know, Hochul is scared. She's spineless. You know, she's been stalling this endorsement. And then, of course, her op-ed in New York Times, you know, I don't support this. I don't support that. It was just a ridiculous read of an endorsement. And, you know, she doesn't feel like she has a choice. I think that's where she's backed up against the wall. And in 24 hours, the Working Families Party tweeted out, you know, a demand of hers already that we saw about, you know, raising taxes on the rich. So, you know, with the left, you cannot apologize and you cannot give in. And once you do, they will continue to push. So I don't know that, I don't think she got that memo. So she's on the hook.
Yes, she most certainly is. And speaking of that Working Families Party tweet or threat that they put out, I'm just going to ask our producer to put that tweet on the screen, because that is, you know, something that says pretty much what's in store for Hochul. And as you see, it says here in the Working Families Party tweet in response to Emma from the New York Times tweet or post, they also say by taxing the rich, and everything that Zoran wants to do hinges on pretty much taxing the rich to get that, you know, to get the income to roll out these services. So I have to say, I don't think Working Families Party would put out a threat like this to Cuomo, especially with their history, but they feel very comfortable putting out this threat to Hochul. Michael, thank you for joining us. We got started and we're talking about Kathy Hochul's op-ed essay endorsement published in the New York Times last night. So if you could let us know what you think about it, and also just briefly introduce yourself first. Michael, I think that there's a little bit of a delay with you. Okay, we'll come back to Michael. Kathy Hochul, that endorsement, WFP, was I saying DSA? WFP's response to that endorsement. And I just also want to play, if we can play Hochul's response today at a press conference when asked why she endorsed Zoran Mamdani. So if we could just play that clip while Michael comes back before we segue onto a different topic.
Happy to. Yesterday I endorsed Zoran Mamdani. I've made it very clear that we have differences, but I also believe that he brings a sense of optimism and the can-do spirit, a positivity that I believe our city needs at this time. And we all know that there's a lot of work that occurs at the state government level once the budget starts and our priorities are unfolded. And I want to continue focusing on affordability, public safety, and making sure he will know that this is a great state, it's a great city, and to work with whoever the next mayor will be, and I do believe it'll be Zoran Mamdani. I do not agree with many of his views, but running a state government or a city government is very different. It's about making sure that the garbage gets picked up, the streets are safe, you deal with homelessness, you deal with subway safety, which I'm focused on intensely. So, I disagree with many statements, I've said that. But also, I believe that we need someone who's going to be open-minded and optimistic and have an attitude, a can-do attitude that I share about knowing that the city's best days still do lie ahead. So thanks, everybody.
Okay, so what do you think, John?
Well, I mean, They need her to raise the taxes. Zoran cannot just tax the rich. Without her, it's all got to come through Albany. But this poor woman, I mean, she goes up there and she's like, oh, I disagree with this and this and this and this and this, but I'm still endorsing him because he has a can-do attitude. I mean, it is mealy-mouthed. I mean, it's just, it's weakness. It's appeasement. And I think she feels trapped, like she has no choice. She knows that Cuomo is not going to win. It's like a worm-eaten shoe. And Mayor Adams is a non-entity. And Curtis has his cats. And it's Mamdani's going to be the mayor, and she's going to have to work with him. So she can either have a bad relationship or a less bad relationship. But I fully expect her to fold and to pass whatever tax increases are demanded of her, even though she's done a pretty good job holding the line on tax increases so far in her tenure, actually.
That's true. Yatin, what are your thoughts on Kathy Hochul's explanation of her endorsement?
It's been less than 24 hours. She feels so uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable watching her respond to that. How is she going to live out the next, like, you know, year? And, you know, after the endorsement, I'm sure a lot of groups, and I see it on, you know, within my groups, there's organized pushback on it. So she throws it out there. She's been getting heavy pushback. That's why she's been stalling for as long as she has. And now all that is unfolding, and you can see it. She is very uncomfortable having to talk about him. This is, and I'm just thinking, you know, assuming Elise Stefanik is moving forward with challenging her, and who knows who others will jump in. They're going to have a field day. I mean, this is stuck to her now. And we're already seeing everyone, you know, pushing it. And she's not comfortable in her own skin. So, I'm not a Hochul fan. So I get a little gleeful watching this type of moments.
Yes, I see Michael is back. Okay, he's gone. All right, we'll come back to him. Hopefully he logs back in with his phone. I'm going to send him a text message. But speaking of taxing the rich, there are other policies pushed by Zoran Mamdani and DSA that Hochul and many other Democrats do not support. One is, of course, most Democrats, the decriminalization of prostitution, his position on, or various positions on education, his position on Rikers. And I'm just curious, what are you guys' thoughts on the way forward between New York City's Democrats and the DSA when it comes to rolling out these policies under Mamdani administration? Like, how exactly is that going to work? And do you think, and John, you covered New York City for the Post, do you think the city council is just going to go along with anything? Or do you think there's anything there that they may say, no, hold on one second?
I think there'll be some Democrats who say, no, we're not doing this. I mean, I think about people like Kalmud Yeager or Bob Holden, who are always very reasonable voices in the city council. And I expect more Republicans to get elected in certainly some places in Queens or even the Bronx that there have been gains in recent years. But for the most part, I expect most of the city council to kind of go along with the program. And they all have a gun to their head from DSA as well. And anyone that causes problems for Mamdani is going to put a big target on their back. So there, I think for the most part, it's going to get pretty communist in New York City pretty soon.
Yatin, you've been watching and observing the current city council cohort, and most of them are returning. So what do you think? Will Mayor Mamdani going to get his way on everything?
I think the current city council, and many of them are coming back. Unfortunately, some of the same ones are term limited, like Bob Holden. But you know, we'll see who will be elected to fill his spot. But the city council swings very left. And there are a few, I want to say, more common sense Democrats, and we have a few Republicans, but they're in the minority. I mean, just last week, you know, Mayor Adams rightfully vetoed a few of their bills, and they got together and overrode his veto. Reasonable stuff. So I really, you know, I think average New Yorkers was hoping for a moderate mayor that will, I mean, like Adams. Adams actually has, you know, been a counter to city council on a number of things that that are about public safety. And he, you know, with Mamdani, he's just going to be egging them on. And I can definitely see the progressive caucus of the city council super excited. We'll have to see who they elect as the speaker next year. So maybe it'll be a moderating voice. Maybe it's going to supercharge everything the DSA wants to do in New York City. So there's a lot at stake. And it's not going to be good for New York.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, because we have a very woke city council, and I think that Mayor Mamdani will pretty much get his way. But you know, we talk about his positions on defund the police. We talk about his position on decriminalizing or legalizing prostitution, and how he, you know, pretty much wants to abolish prisons, or and he wants to shut down Rikers. But, you know, something that we haven't really spoken about that's very near and dear to both you and I, Yatin, is his position on education. He has received the UFT's endorsement. I've heard him talk, touch on a little bit about mayoral control. I think he's going to keep it, but he's going to tweak it, something like that. We heard that there are some people who he's considering to be chancellor. One of them is former Congressman Jamal Bowman, who was a principal at a Bronx middle school that had, you know, the lowest proficiency rates, some of the lowest proficiency rates in the state. But we don't really talk much about it. So Yatin, when it comes to education, what are some of the concerns that you would say parents have with a Mamdani Department of Education?
Yeah, I mean, there, everything that I've read about him regarding education is very concerning. One is, you know, for a major New York City mayoral candidate, you know, he didn't sit down with New York Times to talk about education. I mean, that's just, you know, the school budget is one third of our city budget. It's a very substantial part of what we spend our tax money on. And of course it affects about, you know, a million students here still, both district as well as charter students. So this is really significant. And the fact that he really didn't have much to say about it is just, you know, he's going to be steamrolled by whoever controls him. And the UFT endorsed him. The UFT is all powerful, and they will get a lot of what they want with the Mamdani administration. In terms of specific policies, you know, specialized high school, even though he's a graduate of specialized high school, we both graduated from Bronx Science, you know, that doesn't mean he supports it. And he's waffled back and forth for his assembly run. in getting the Working Family Party endorsement, DSA, he wanted to repeal Heck Calandra. And now he softened up, you know, with John Liu's endorsement, you know, he kind of said he was going to leave things alone. I don't believe him, not because I think he's lying. I just think he's going to be very much at the disposal of the ultra left as it relates to education, and he will be pressured to do something about it. You know, charters, of course, is he's very much against school choice. So it's going to be a tough 4 years for families that are, you know, living in areas where they don't have great schools. That's going to, they're going to be stuck. So we are very worried about Mamdani, and as it relates to who he will install as the chancellor, you know, the names that have been floating out there between Jamal Bowman, as well as I think Misha Porter, Rita Joseph, and the Kumar Samuels, I believe, the District 3 for West Side superintendent. I don't know too much about him, so I'll, but Rita Joseph, as well as, you know, Misha Porter are not friendly to a lot of the issues that I care a lot about. So it'll be tough for us.
Yes, it would be. I see Michael is in the green room, so I think he's going to come on. Let's see. Hi, Michael. So is this it? Are you good?
I'm on my phone now, so hopefully it comes out okay.
Yeah. It comes out okay. So we're speaking about Zoran's, you know, education agenda. His position on mayoral control, on charters, on specialized high schools, and possible chancellors. So if you could just we'd quickly introduce yourself, and then let's talk about that. And then I want to get some feedback from John.
I was going to tease that I'm the only one person doesn't need any introduction. Oh, I'm teasing it. I'm Michael Benjamin, a former member of the Assembly from the Bronx. I now work full time as a associate editor of the editorial page at the New York Post. And I have lots of opinions I share through my work at the Post and on X, formerly known as Twitter, and try to you know, discuss things that, you know, are important to me, I think, and New Yorkers, and to sort of guide ourselves, our city, and my, I guess my followers to, you know, proper, I guess, policy positions. Mamdani's education. We did an editorial, I think, where we slammed him for the likelihood of him making former Congressman Jamal Bowman, former charter school educator and I guess principal, his go-to guy as the next chancellor of the city of New York, should Mamdani win the election this coming November. And of course, I'm not happy that someone like Jamal Bowman could be sitting at Tweed Courthouse directing mayhem at the City Department of Education, knowing his background and knowing his his thoughts and belief systems. And in my view, they're not good for school children. They're not good for parents, and they're not good for the city's educational system.
Yeah, no, what people... You know, I can't pull it up now, and I don't know if Yatin it knows the numbers, but when it comes to that middle school in the Bronx that Bowman was principal of, including the time when when his license lapsed and he wasn't, qualified, certified to be principal for an amount of time. But that school had like some of the lowest proficiency rates in the state. I think it was so bad that not one child at that school was reading at grade level. So
I think I have a similar recollection, and that would make him, in my view, you know, unfit to be chancellor when he was running a school. He couldn't get his children reading on grade level. Of course, he's going to blame, you know, the racist educational system. That you know, math is racist, reading is racist, American history is racist. All the excuses other than his ability to work with teachers, with students and parents to improve student performance and to demand excellence from their students. We all know that schools that are successful have cultures of high expectations, proper performance, from the lowest ability student to the highest ability student. Everyone is encouraged to reach their potential and given the tools in which to do so and not given excuses.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And he'll probably use those excuses. But, you know, John, you were the one that actually brought it up with Yatin and I that, like, no one is talking about his education platform.
Right. Well, it's funny, you know, the three of you are probably much more well versed in the nitty gritty of the details of what he's going to do in terms of policy. But I just know that it's in the Democratic Socialists' platform. It's on their website that they want to get more involved in school boards around the country because that's sort of where they see an opening, and they view it's just standard communist stuff to view schools as soft targets for propaganda. And I'm sort of very worried on a macro level, especially if you get a socialist like Bowman in charge of schools, that you're going to start seeing essentially something to the effect of communist socialist propaganda brought into schools. And this will be in the form of lesson plans and assigned readings. And I don't know what that's going to look like, but, you know, kids are going to come home and say, I learned about how capitalism was evil today. And you're going to hear things like that. I learned about how billionaires were evil. I learned about how Israel is the worst country in the world. You're going to hear things like that. And it's going to be subsidized by the taxpayers. It's a very sad, dark place we're going to go to. And that's, they view the next generation as sort of the soft targets for the propaganda. So it's not about winning today necessarily, but it's, you know, 10, 15 years from now, having a new voter base of people in the can. It's very dark stuff.
You know, John, and what's really also troubling as well is that there is no backstop at the state level. The state education department and the state board of regents, they sort of fall in line with that sort of thinking, where they want to align the curriculum and the lesson plans to certain social issues. And they would be okay with a Bowman-run DOE, which would do that sort of thing, so long as they were teaching the basics.
No one's going to stand up to him. He's going to win this race. And you know what? If Sliwa and Adams dropped out, I think he'd still win. He would beat Cuomo head-to-head. It's gotten that bad. And he will have, I don't want to use the word mandate, but he will have a very strong vote of confidence from the voters. And I just don't see anyone in the state being able to stand up to him on any issue.
Now, I would agree with you. I think that was part of Governor Hochul's calculation in capitulating and agreeing to endorse him via the New York Times this weekend.
Yeah, you missed the hostage press conference that we watched, but yes.
Well, this is a very depressing call, especially for public school families. The more affluent families have chosen to move out to, you know, good school districts, whether it's in Long Island, New Jersey. You have parents here who can afford private schools, and, you know, more are sending their kids to Catholic schools, private schools. And in our public school system, 70% of the students are considered low income. And we have no choice but to rely on our public schools. And to hear John talking about these becoming places where they will push their agenda, and Michael's absolutely right. You know, the state, which can do a lot in education and does, is not going to be a backstop to any of the policies that they're pushing. We have You know, the commissioner and the regent they're moving to get rid of more standards, you know, at the graduation level. We're getting rid of, you know, requiring regents to pass, creating these portraits of a student, which I have no idea what that is. It's just so subjective. Yeah, it makes me really worried as to why families will want to stay here, especially the ones that are middle income and up that may have a choice to change things for the most precious thing in their life, which is their students, their children's education. This is very worrisome for really the middle class in New York City.
Which is why they should be energized to vote in the election rather than throwing their hands up and saying it's a depressing possible outcome. Well, you can change the outcome if you actually, you know, decide to vote and then coalesce around an appropriate alternative candidate. And in my view, that appropriate alternative candidate is Curtis Sliwa, because he's from the outside. He's an outsider. He owes no one anything. He doesn't owe the Republicans establishment anything. In fact, they despise him. He doesn't owe the Democratic Party establishment, because they despise him. He doesn't owe the unions, because they despise him. What he does owe, he owes the voters and the residents of the city of New York, from of whom he looks like and comes from and speaks to directly, unlike, you know, these manufactured candidates who all, you know, read from the same script and offer the same pablum. And, you know, Curtis is the real guy. He looks like, he talks like most New Yorkers. And he wants to, as the next mayor, is to go after the systemic corruption that's in so many of our departments, whether it's the buildings department, whether it's OPT at the Department of Education, the Office of People Transportation, looking at really overturning the tables at the temple of the city bureaucracy and trying to make government actually work for the people of New York and not work for the politicians, the unions, and the special interests. Or in this case, now it's going to be, you know, Democratic Socialists.
Well, I mean, Michael, you say that, you know, if people have a problem with these likely policies, then they must, you know, get out and vote. You know, but this is the issue. No one's talking about education. The New York Times isn't talking about education. Yeah, I mean, the Post has touched on it, but the other outlets in New York City are not asking these questions of Zoran. They're not touching it. So if the media is not talking about it and informing the public about, you know, the lack of answers when it comes to Zoran's policies on education and how it could possibly impact families. You know, for example, with the Shisset, with charter schools, as, you know, as an African Muslim and as a parent whose children have both attended district schools, charter schools, and a specialized high school, I can tell you that for us African parents, we put our kids in charter schools. Like most African parents, and Michael, you see it, you in the Bronx, where are their kids? Even in Harlem, where are their kids? Those African parents who are also majority Muslim put their kids in charter schools. But Zoran is busy going around to the African Muslim mosque because it's, you know, hundreds of thousands of registered African Muslim voters and saying, vote for me because, you know, I'm Muslim. But these families don't know that he's against charter schools, which is where they put their kids because they want that rigorous instruction and structure. They're completely unaware that he and the DSA's policies are going to push gender ideology in our schools and that they don't support the recent Supreme Court decision that says that parents can opt out when it comes to you know, gender ideology in instruction in schools and lessons. Like, they don't know. And the people who are supposed to let them know about all of these things is the press. And media is just, I don't know what it is. And I don't have the tweet from J.C. Polanco where even he's talking about, hey, the media needs to ask these questions. So, I mean, John, you're in D.C. You were here in New York. What else can be done?
It's tough because I think the overriding issue, the issue that's more important than education and more important than everything you just mentioned, is housing and affordability. And then look, there is a major housing crisis in New York City. There are not enough places to live. And there are more people coming here than new apartments are being built. And I don't know what the most exact figure is now, but your one bedroom or studio in New York City is like $4,000 a month or something crazy like that. I mean, Michael, you might have the exact figure. I know the Post regularly publishes this. That's too expensive. That when I tell people in D.C. what you pay for in New York City, they're shocked. They're shocked at what things cost in New York City. In D.C., you can buy a two-bedroom apartment in a luxury building, doorman with a swimming pool, for $650 and $800 a month in maintenance. That's like, and they think that's crazy expensive, and they don't realize that in New York you're looking at that's a $2 million situation, or 1.5, and it's and you have people like Linda Rosenthal, head of the Assembly Housing Committee, living in a rent stabilized apartment that she inherited from her grandmother, so she doesn't want to build more apartments because she's great. It's a nice apartment, by the way. I wrote about it years ago. And Zoran is rightly tapping into the anger people feel. And if you don't have a place to live and you can't afford to live anywhere and you're spending 50 or 60% of your income on rent every single month, none of these other issues matter. And the city is genuinely too expensive. And there are a lot of issues you're raising that I think would resonate with more people if New York wasn't so impossible to live in. Now, of course, the answer is, you know, how do you have to build more housing? And there's a private way to do this and a public way to do this. And Zoran supports the public way, which is just, you know, 500,000 new NYCHA units, you know, because the city's been such a great landlord. But he's tapped into an issue that, I, as much as I love someone like Curtis doesn't talk about affordability all that much. And Cuomo and Adams have missed the boat on that as well.
Well, few people actually in government can actually talk about affordability because they're the reason why the city's become unaffordable. Nobody wants to admit that the housing policy for the last 50 years, well, 60 years, is mostly responsible for the apartment shortage in New York. They don't want to admit that the rent stabilization, the rent control laws have created disincentives for private developers, big or small, private landlords, to do what they need to do to maintain and keep apartments for New Yorkers. I mean, Mamdani and Governor Cuomo both were in favor. They both pushed the Housing Stability and Tenant Protection Act, which has taken 47,000 units off the market because landlords that need to renovate and repair them aren't able to do so because they can't then recoup their renovation costs by raising the rent. And so they're just walking away from the apartment and leaving them vacant until something changes. So instead of actually changing the law and gutting this stupid bill that Cuomo signed, that Mamdani and Democrats, both leftists and regular Democrats, pushed on New Yorkers. Instead of getting rid of it, they're demonizing landlords even more when it's not their fault. And that's what needs to be brought to the public's attention. But nobody in the mainstream media outside of the Post is talking about this or identifying the true villains in this. And what I would say is that if there are any leaders of 527 PACs out there, that they need to be the ones to put this information out because it's not going to be done by free media. It's going to be done by the 527s who should be focusing in on, one, getting the message out to the immigrant communities that are voters, and who need to be moved away from this effort to have them identify with Mamdani because he happens to be South Asian and person of color, a person who's non-Christian, who's Muslim, who is being pushed as somebody who represents their views. He does not represent the mainstream average views of most South Asians, many, if not most Muslims in New York. Mm-hmm. And once at 527 can continually over the next 50 days pull back the mask over Mamdani and talk about the issues and how they ought to be addressed, that's one way of bringing down his numbers and then raising the numbers of Curtis Sliwa by making him the alternative to Mamdani's policies and why they're bad for New Yorkers. This election should not be about one's ethnicity or one's religion. It's about doing what's best for New York and recognizing that the quasi-socialist policies of New York over the last 60 years is responsible for much of the unaffordability in our city.
Yeah, no, I just want to jump in. I mean, certainly the supply of housing is one factor of making things so expensive. But, you know, I think what we don't think about, and I'm a small property landlord, you know, I got a little apartment to diversify my retirement. It's all the cost that it takes to actually, you know, the labor, you know, he wants to raise minimum wage. Well, the labor costs that it takes to maintain apartments, service them, the insurance, now the utilities, okay, because of the aggressive push for green energy to replace it with electric. So all of these new buildings, they're going to be, you know, asked to build, whether it's government funded or private, they have to comply with now a very expensive form of energy. And when these, you know, when these Zoran voters get into these, oh, brand new apartments, oh my goodness, what? My electric bill is $500, $700 to heat, to cook. I have to pay the staff. What? I have to pay them $30 an hour. The insurance, the property taxes that he's going to ask our New York State to raise, those things will continue to go up. That is a huge factor of what people who even own their homes have to pay. So forget about, you know, the supply for renters and how much they're paying. Believe me, that is painful. And I have 20-something-year-olds in my family who would like to launch, right? Who would like to move out of their parents' home. And it's absolutely very, very expensive for them to think about doing that. But I don't want to just focus it only on the housing supply. And I think we need to get the conversation to be a lot more holistic. And back to what Michael, it's a lot of the policies that that our electeds have put in place that have cost us a lot to be able to keep up with in living in New York City.
Every week, the Post editorials focus on those issues, whether it's the climate mandates that are primarily behind the rising electricity costs, the mandate to get rid of fossil fuels, to reduce them, to try
that's
to
why we more, post.
Use more and more solar, expensive solar and wind energy. I mean, the wind projects that the governor and Governor Cuomo have been pushing, you know, they basically have been pushed out to like the year 2040 because they're not feasible now. The same thing with solar energy. I mean, Governor Cuomo invested nearly $1 billion with Elon Musk, Solar City, and it's sitting there empty. It has yet to produce a single solar panel. It's wasted money. And that's what's making New York State extremely expensive. And that's what's causing people who can afford it and gotten fed up and have begun to move out. Whether they're moving to a neighboring state or they're moving south, they're getting out of their hightailing out of New York because they see where the costs are going. And it's because of government policies that are misguided and have been, put on steroids by succeeding legislative sessions and governors rather than pulling back. And when they've been advised to pull back, they were reluctant. It's only recently that the Governor Hochul had listened to her, electricity and energy advisors to recognize that, one, we don't have enough energy because it's going to be produced by alternative fuels. Not enough because it's going to be produced by normal, regular gas-fired facilities. We have to look at creating licensing modular nuclear power plant in upstate New York in order to provide the energy that New York is going to need going forward based on these stupid mandates on the types of energy and clean energy that must be produced, and that's raising our costs. People look at their electric bill, and it's going up because Con Edison isn't trying to make money for shareholders. They're trying to create a cash flow that allows them to upgrade the grid, that allows them to begin to make it possible for them to produce energy that's required by these stupid mandates. These stupid climate change mandates, which we're now finding out are based on, you know, bogus science. That's based on, bogus projections, biased projections to create an outcome that nobody was questioning and agreeing that, oh, yeah, the sea levels are rising monumentally. We're all going to be flooded. We got to do X, Y, and Z to stop this from happening. Well, guess what? And simple engineers in Europe figured out how best to measure the sea levels and found out, yeah, they're rising. They're rising normally, and they're not rising to any catastrophic levels. We need to take that kind of thinking and apply to all the other dire predictions that have been used to sell this whole climate change agenda and push our alternative fuels on New Yorkers and others. I mean, the most expensive ones. And then, you know, they want to blame landlords and developers when it's a very legislative they elect day in and day out, who made their lives miserable.
John, I see you over there nodding your head.
I agree with everything. I mean, it in New York City, you know, the red tape and regulations and bureaucracy, it's like $1 million to dig a hole anywhere. And it's not just for housing. It's the reason why the Second Avenue subway took 100 years to finish and ran tremendously over budget. It's the same reason all city projects take years and years to finish that they shouldn't and always run over budget. I remember rebuilding of Ground Zero was another disaster. So It's very tough. There are cities where it's easy to build. Even New Rochelle, New York. I read an article in the New York Times about how they're building homes in New Rochelle, and they've actually bent the cost curve on buying property in New Rochelle. Now, I don't know who wants to live in New Rochelle, but other cities have done this. Austin, Texas also did this. If you add to the supply, you bring down the cost. It's very basic supply and demand. Although, look, New York City is it's a destination place. And it's very sad, but look, there is a silver lining, which I will draw to your attention. I think George Will wrote this, so I'll crib it from him. There's a whole generation of young people that are going all in right now and that are going to learn a very valuable lesson, I think, in the next few years about when things don't pan out the way that they're being sold at will. And there's a lot of sort of socialist euphoria that's happening. And I think it's been quite a while since we've had someone as progressive as Mamdani in City Hall. And people have forgotten what really that means to go in the direction he's going to take us in. And I think it's going to be rough, and I feel bad for the small property owners, and I feel bad for people in bad neighborhoods who are going to have to deal with a lot more violent crime. But I think that a generation of New York City voters, I'm going to use a really internet term now, could be red-pilled in the next few years because a lot of the stuff that's being promised, the socialist utopia, it's not going to happen. And I think there will be a lot of, you know, next day hangover from a lot of these Zoomers, you know, when they get a little bit older, being like, wow, that was crazy. Let's not do that again. And that won't save us forever, but it may buy us another couple of generations where we don't have to do this again.
Yeah, I just wish we didn't have to go through it first to learn the lessons, to learn the hard lessons. I just want to close on, the last last topic when it comes to this mayoral election and the policies. when it comes to the NYPD, which was also a surprise with Kathy Hochul endorsing Zohran last night, but, you know, he told the Times that he's going to apologize to the NYPD. The next day, on Thursday, Kathy Hochul said he needs to apologize to the NYPD. We're all still waiting on the apology to the NYPD, which still hasn't happened. And I saw there was a tweet today, and I'd like our producer to play the video of Zohran's word salad response. So here, you know, on when is he going to apologize? Like, when is this apology going to happen with the NYPD? Like, how is he going to do it? Because it's days later and he still hasn't. And with everything else that I've noticed with Zohran, it's like you have to follow his conversation or his responses like you doing some kind of treasure hunt, the back, the forth, the up, the down, and then at the end he still doesn't say anything of substance. And when asked today about this apology to the NYPD for saying they're racist, for accusing them of sexual violence, and other things, this is his response that he said to one of the reporters that I would like to play. And I'd like you guys to please explain it to me. Why are people still like just believing him when what he says or his responses to me are just nonsensical?
The importance at the core of my politics is not a theatrics and where I speak to the media to convey what I'm speaking with officers. At the core of this campaign has been those conversations. Conversations with rank and file officers, conversations with officers in leadership, and conversations that recognize not only the pain and the diagnosis of it, but how to go beyond acknowledging it and addressing it. And I look forward to working with those officers in partnership.
And this
apology happening or not?
So, and this is his response to this reporter. If we could just pull up the reporter's actual tweet where he recorded the video. I think the reporter, who is this reporter with? Dan Rivoli. I don't know who he's with.
New York One, Dan Rivoli, yeah.
One.
That's a great question.
Dan Rivoli, New York One.
Yeah, so that's that was Zohran's response to Dan's question on when is he going to apologize to the NYPD?
Yeah, well, that's going to be not.
He's not going to do it, Mona. He's not. I mean, look, that word salad was like, I don't know what question he was answering. It was purposeful in not wanting to give an answer. And you know, he got the endorsement from Hochul, and you know, he doesn't want to do it, and his base, they don't want to see him do it either. So he doesn't want to be caught on video saying that.
Yeah,
yeah, right. If he apologizes in a public setting, the police officers, his rank and file, his base, they will scorch him. What he keeps talking about apparently is that he has had some conversations with persons who may or may not have been, you know, current law enforcement, and talking to them about policing is what I gathered. He's not going to identify who those people were or where he made those comments, whether he was talking to, you know, the Muslim Police Officer Society or the, you know, or the Guardians, whomever. He's not identifying who he spoke to or just spoke to a cop in a donut shop. He's not identifying, and he's not going to, because he knows he cannot make a full-fledged apology in public without setting off you know, the hardcore true believers in his camp. he's going to wind up like Bill de Blasio, unfortunately, at some police officer's funeral, and we have the entire rank and file turning their backs on him when he shows up at the funeral service.
Well, he clearly doesn't need to apologize. He got the Hochul endorsement without apologizing. Schumer and Hakeem will be along shortly. Look, I mean, all of this, Zoran is pivoting to the middle. He's a democratic socialist. He's always been a democratic socialist. Those tweets that he's allegedly going to apologize for, that's his true beliefs. That's what he believes. I don't believe that you could be screaming defund the police, defund the police. I hate the police. And then suddenly you run for mayor and it's like, I don't know. I love cops. I no longer reflects my, I mean, give me a break. And I know he's trying to do that for a lot of issues. It is. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt he will pivot right back to his core beliefs the second he is in office. He says he's not going to defund. But if you even look at his campaign platform, we're not defunding the police, but we're going to have this Department of Community Safety, the social workers, and they're going to be funded with transfers from other agencies. But we don't say what those agencies are. And obviously, it's going to be the police. The money's got to come from somewhere. Obviously, police money is going to be moved to the Department of Community Safety. They're not going to call it defund. The New York Times won't call it defund. No one's going to use the D word because they're all going to be in the tank. But that's what it is going to be in practice. He has said on podcasts he's not going to send cops to domestic violence, the most dangerous thing cops are called to. Not doing that. He's never asked about that ever. Because, you know, the press corps is very out to lunch, usually with the exception of the New York Post. And there will be no, this moderate Zoran will not exist. Does not exist at all. There's no reason.
It doesn't exist now. Yeah. I mean, his go-to is that, well, it's not in my campaign platform. Well, nobody asked you that. We're asking you, what is it you believe? And he won't respond. He's always refers to his campaign platform, which only exists until January 1st of 2026. Then it's a public policy. Then it's too late. And he knows that. He and his crew know that. I mean, it's the same thing he did in alleged conversations with Hochul about the importance of protecting Jews and protecting their safety. And he's never publicly said that because he knows that his constituency, you know, will go apoplectic if he appears to concede to what they call Jewish feelings. And he's part of that. What did he say? Well, if Netanyahu is in New York and when he's mayor, he's going to have him arrested based on a warrant from the International Criminal Court, a court that that's his government that actually isn't a signatory to and whose warrant is invalid in the United States, and for whom any kind of arrest warrant for Netanyahu when he's on official business to the UN next September cannot be enforced. And there's no way that any kind of federal protection agency or the Israelis will allow Mamdani or his cops anywhere near him.
When someone tells you who they are, you have to believe them, to quote Maya. So that's my final thought on Zoran. And
yep. Yes, I think that is exactly what it is. Believe them the first time. But it's going to be interesting. I think we have 6 weeks to go to early voting. I think early voting starts October 25th. And let's hope that these PACs get the word out, that they actually run these public awareness, these education campaigns, and let voters know what his policies are and what the impact would be and the consequences would be of these policies. We'll touch on one last topic quickly. And this one is mostly for you, John. Hochul keeps on saying, he's gonna fight against Trump. Like, she's supporting him because he's gonna fight Trump. No, and you're in DC, and we need the federal dollars. We need the federal government. Like, how are they supposed to fight Trump? Like, why is it about fighting Trump? We need our elected officials to work with Trump, but. Right. You know, what's the feeling you get down there in D.C. and your thoughts on this? Everything is about fighting Trump.
Well, I mean, I think Hochul was trying to latch on to anything she could that would be palatable to her base and Zoran's base. And fighting Trump is always a good campaign message in New York City, in New York State. But, you know, she herself hasn't exactly been fighting Trump. She's worked with him on a lot of different things to get federal money over here. And I think, you know, things happen. I remember during the coronavirus, you needed Trump and the state government to coordinate on supplies, mm-hmm. and ventilators and PPE. And Cuomo did that to, you know, varying success, depends who you ask. And things are going to happen when Mamdani is mayor that will require this, the mayor and the governor and the president, to all be on the same page, or at least, you know, have a working relationship. And if, you know, Trump has a lot of property in New York City, it's going to be a very tempting thing for Mamdani to find ways to gum up Trump's, you know, personal property in the city. And he'll have a lot of pressure from liberals to do that and other creative schemes at poking at the president. But it is a losing battle. Federal money is very, very important to the functioning of the city and the state. I know a lot of big budget, the Second Avenue subway and the Gateway Tunnel project, both relied on a lot of federal money. Schumer, to his credit, is very good at getting federal money back to the state. That's kind of what I expect local leaders to do when they interface with the federal government, not to fight them. So I hope it's just rhetoric. I hope they can come to some working relationship. Because Mamdani is going to be mayor. I think, you know, when there's four candidates in the race and Michael Benjamin is telling you he's hoping for Curtis Sliwa to win, you know, we're in very bad shape. And I love Curtis to death. That shouldn't be taken as a negative on Curtis. But Curtis is not going to win. And neither will Cuomo, neither will Mayor Adams. It's going to be Zoran. And I hope it's not as bad as, but it is. I don't know. I have a dismal outlook on it, unfortunately. And he will fight Trump, and he will cost the city federal dollars. There's no question. He will not be able to resist taking that bait, and it will make us all worse off and poorer.
And they also need a boogeyman to blame for when their policies fail. A lot easier to point the finger at Washington, D.C. and Donald Trump than at point fingers at the city council, at City Hall. Correct. At Albany, at Governor Hochul.
Yep. Unfortunately, you guys are right on this one. But guys, thank you so very much for this enlightening conversation and for joining us here on the spot. And I hope that you guys are going to be back again before before early voting starts, because I have a feeling there's going to be a lot happening in the next couple of weeks. So thank you all. Thank you very much for joining me tonight.